Good afternoon, everyone. First of all, I would like to thank the organizers, particularly Bronwyn, for giving me the opportunity to be here today and to share this presentation with you. I will going to talk about the influence of biogenic immune-forming Lactobacillus covatus strains, which is a bacterium, on cheese quality. I hope to share some useful insights with you, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. Thank you again for having me, and let's get started. My name is Stefan. I'm a biologist by training, and I'm working now for more than 20 years doing cheese research. My favorite topic is biogenic immune formation in cheese. I'm working at Acroscope, which is a major Swiss federal research institute, doing research on agricultural and food topics. In Liebefeld, which is near Bern, there's what I like to call the Center of Competence for Dairy Research. This center was founded more than 100 years ago to help Swiss cheesemakers to improve cheese quality and cheese safety. And this includes, we have laboratories that have experience with the cheese matrix. We have on the site the starter culture production site, the so-called Liebefelder Kulturen AG, where all the Swiss cheesemakers get their starter cultures from. Then we have consultants which travel throughout Switzerland and then speak to the Swiss cheesemakers, and if there are problems, then they send these samples to us in the labs to find a solution. And we have a pilot plant, which is very important for me. There we have 8 vats, so that we can do 8 cheeses at the time. And I usually use this to reproduce cheese defects to understand the underlying molecular mechanisms and so find solutions for the cheese makers so how they can prevent cheese defects. In the presentation today, I first would like to show you why biogenic amines matter. It's not only histamine, there are also other ones. Then show you a pilot plant study we did with Lardy Lactobacillus covatus strains, and then also show noch a real case study which involves Lardy Lactobacillus covatus, which makes really a huge problem there. Just to remind you, yeah, how are biogenic amines formed in cheese? It's important, or you need ripening, you need time. During the ripening, the caseins are degraded by the microbial proteases or indigenous milk proteases, but also by the rennet, the peptides, and then finally free amino acids are formed. And in case, then you have decarboxylating microbes in the cheese or on the surface, they do so, and thereby they form then the biogenic amines and CO2. This is problematic, because the biogenic amines itself, when they come into the intestine, they cross usually the intestinal wall, and you have oxidizers in the wall, which then oxidize the biogenic amines, and then they are excreted by the body. But there are conditions, it could be due to genetic reasons, or because you take pharmaceuticals, or you take alcohol, these oxidases are inhibited, or the activity is impaired, and then the biogenic amines come directly into the blood. And most of them are neurotransmitters, so then they act immediately on the circulatory system, and the biogenic amines have also the possibility to cross the brain-blood barrier. So they come into the brain and immediately react with the nervous system there. And then you have symptoms, depending on the dose, that like nausea, diarrhea, headache, or einfach feeling unwell. Just to mind, these are not regulated. It's only regulated for histamine in seafood or in fish. There's no regulation so far for cheese. And what is often forgotten, that as said, shown by Igor, that during the formation they produce CO2, which can heavily affect cheese. I want to show you here an unpublished study we did with Swiss-type cheese, where we added a cadaverine-forming non-starter lactic acid bacteria to the milk and then make the Swiss type cheese. What you see here is after 90 months of ripening. On the left hand side, you have the control. There, we did not find cadaverine or putrescine. with C3 and C4, you see the concentrations of propionic and butyric acid. On the right-hand side, you see what's happening when this guy starts to grow. The cheese is bloated, and the size and the number of the eyes is heavily increased. You see also the amounts of cadaverine and putrescine, which are extremely high. So from my point of view, it's important that we do research on biogenic amine formation because it can heavily influence cheese quality and then lead to significant losses for the cheese makers. However, when you start to read the original research papers, you only find a few of these where scientists really deliberately put biogenic amine-forming bacteria into milk and then made this into cheese. We also have very limited or a few methods available to detect these biogenic amine-forming bacteria in milk and cheese. And also it's important, as we heard from Igor, to quantify these. And there are also noch some abiotic factors that we do not completely understand how they drive the biogenic amine formation. So if we do this research, we could, on the one hand, predict if you have biogenic amine producing bacteria in the cheese, maybe when it's a good time point to sell the cheese and not to ripen it for too long. Yeah, it's a solution you have. So if you could model it, early on, you can approximate already after 40 days, usually you can determine the biogenic amines and then you can decide what to do. Usually you have a contamination of the milk or of the cheese with the right tools so that you could find the source of contamination and together this would help to mitigate biogenic amine formation in cheese. Here noch a table where I summarized what at least I know. Scientists really deliberately put bacteria into the milk to provoke biogenic amine production in cheese. So for histamine, for example, it's Lentilactobacillus parabuchni, we heard it. But also there's Tetragynoccus halophilus carrying a plasmid, which encodes a histidine decarboxylase. When it comes to tyramine, there's one study where enterococci were added to the milk and another one where Covatus was added. And in this case, the cheeses accumulated tyramine. With regard to phenylethylamine and tryptamine, so far I do not know any study where it's known which bacterium is producing this compound. And for cadaverine and putrescine, it was shown that Enterobacteria C play a role, such as Hafnia alvei and Morganella morgani. And then one maybe that is of interest for you, Pauci lactobacillus wasachensis, which has been isolated from cheddar, which really produces huge amounts of cadaverine and putrescine and there induces slits and cracks. And we became interested in Lactobacillus quartus because of two cases. In 2020, COVID time, we received cheeses in bloated packages. We could exclude whether that the gas that formed in these packages is propionic acid or butyric acid fermentation. And then went for the biogenic amines and we found tyramine, phenylethylamine, and tryptamine. I could exclude the presence of enterococci, but instead I isolated Lactobacillus covatus, who produced tyramine and phenylethylamine in the lab. We also then used the species-specific PCR to locate the bacterium, and we only found it on the outside of these cheeses, but not in the inside. At the time, I was not allowed to go to the packager and get samples from the system there, but we concluded order that it got contaminated, the cheese, due to cutting and packaging, and then this led to the formation of biogenic amines, and then the packages started to bloat. When we said this to the packager, the problem disappeared. So he did something, we do not know what exactly. Maybe cleaning, yeah. Please not recording this. And in another study, we isolated Lactobacillus covatus from raclette. And I was analyzing these strains or isolates for their capability to produce biogenic amines, and they found then isolates that could produce tryptamine. And if you remember the table, so far it was at that time not known which bacterium could produce this compound in cheese. So we decided to make a cheese study. The objectives were as follows. We wanted to know how fast do they grow, what kind of, then do they have an influence on proteolysis. We measured several metabolites to really see how they affect the biochemistry of cheese, and also then did some X-ray images at the end of the experiment just to see can they influence eye formation. Because of the time, I cannot show every result we obtained from this experiment. This was a setup. We did 6 variants, a control. We did not add Covatus to the milk. And then we selected 5 single strains. So each variant got one. And I will show you on the next slide what was the rationale behind the selection of these strains. We used the mesophilic starter culture. It's only lactococci. Then repeated this to be able to make statistics. And we choose Rucklet as a system because we knew that the bacteria can grow in this system. Some key points of the system. We had 50 liters of cow milk per vet. The milk was pasteurized. Then we inoculated with the Covatus strain, with a single one, added the starter. The milk was then coagulated using rennet. And finally, the whole curd whey mixture was heated to 38 degrees. And after molding, the cheeses were put into a brine bath and then smear ripened in a cellar for 120 days at 10 to 11 degrees. The strains we selected were like this. So we studied in the lab which biogenic amines they can form. We had one strain that did not produce any biogenic amines in the lab. Then 4 strains that all produced tyramine and phenylethylamine. And one strain was also able to produce putrescine and cadaverine, and another one tryptamine. The growth in the cheese we followed using PCR because there was no selective medium available at the moment. And we saw then within 14 days that they grew up to logs. So compared, for example, with Lentibacillus parabuchneri, this is quite fast. He needs approximately 4 weeks to reach these cell numbers. Then the cell numbers remain stable. This is a control. Here's an outlier. And what's not quite interesting is that all the amine-forming strains sort of had higher cell counts than the non-amine producing strain. And this could be explained by the fact that these bacteria use this metabolic activity to produce also energy. I also like to, during a cheese ripening, to study the lactate metabolism. It's a cheap method, and you already get a knowledge before you use the really expensive methodology what's going on. So after 24 hours, usually in Rucklet, the whole lactose is transformed into lactate, L-lactate. And then during ripening, the concentration decreases because it's a smear-ripened system, and the smear is degrading then the lactate. And in case of all the variants where we added the Covatus strains, we had lower concentrations. And this is because these strains can convert the L-lactate to D-lactate. So I was already during the study quite sure, okay, the strains are metabolic active. So here I show you then the formation accumulation of biogenic amines. We took at several time points samples, and as expected, all the variants where we added the tyramine producing bacteria, we got accumulation of tyramine. At the end of ripening, we had 300 milligram per kilogram. This is comparable to what was shown with enterococci. When it comes to the phenylethylamine, this is quite interesting because all the strains that also produce tyramine produce this compound, but we saw 2 different groups, one that produced more than 100 and one less. And it is assumed that the bacteria uses the same pathway as for the tyramine production, but there seems to be a regulation that's now such an biotic or abiotic factor that we do not understand really what's going on here. In the very end, with the tryptamine-producing strain, we had accumulation of tryptamine, and in the very end, with the putocin-cadaverine-producing strain, we had accumulation of putocin and cadaverine. What's not really interesting, and please keep this in mind when we come to the real case study, is that Covatus produces more putocin than cadaverine. No, we did not find any histamine, so it was zero. The Covatus I've really screened a lot. I've never found so far a histamine-producing Covatus strain, although it's reported in the literature that these exist. So if you have one, please give it to me. I'm really interested to understand if this is really a Covatus or not. As said, we have done a lot of analysis. I like not to show you the precursors or the free amino acids because we see a lot of differences, and this is something. Yeah, it shows that this species has also displays metabolic diversity, something I have not seen so far with parabuchenry strains. Oops. So, for example, the tyrosine was completely depleted in the cheeses, so this is really limiting then the tyramine formation. This we did not see for phenylalanine, the precursor for phenylethylamine. So, again, here somehow is a regulation that the strains do not use completely the phenylalanine available. We have the tryptophan, the precursor of tryptamine, did not see any changes or differences. Interesting then with the ornithine, which is a precursor for putrescin, it was completely depleted in the cheeses. But for the lysine, which is a precursor for cadaverine, we did not see any changes. So it's not the availability of the substrate which makes the strain not able to produce really huge amounts of cadaverine. Now something interesting, now three further amino acids, arginine, aspartatic, serine, they were degraded. Or they utilized completely in the cheeses. So it could be, or this is the limitation of the study, or we added only a single strain. It could be if you have a mixture of Lati, Lactobacillus, Covatus strain, that you could have really a higher production of biogenic amines. So, for example, here is a strain which can convert arginine to ornithine, and this would then be used by another one, the putocin producing strain. But these interactions would have to be studied in another cheese experiment. Finally, noch the X-ray images. Here are the two controls. These are all the variants where we added the single strains. You see a black bar. This comes from a cheese trier because we're really interested to show that the biogenic amine formation is taking place also in the cheese, not only on the surface. And then when we compare the eyes, and the number of the eyes and eye size, we did not see really a significant difference. This could be due to the system. Rucklet has a very soft rind, and gas can easily diffuse out. And if you would have a hard rind, so probably then there would build up a gas pressure, and that this could lead to cracks. And there's one study out there where scientists added Lati, Lactobacillus covatus to cheddar, and in this case they saw really the appearance of cracks and slits. So, here a summary of this study. So we could confirm that Covatus produces tyramine in the cheeses, and we could fill some gaps. So, for example, Covatus also produces phenylethylamine and tryptamine in cheese. Then we have a new one that can produce quite high amounts of putrescin. I did not list here for cadaverine because the concentrations were, from my point of view, really, really low. So with this, I would like to come to the real case study. A couple of months ago, we got these cheeses. It's Swiss type cheese. And when it's packaged, it starts to make air bubbles. The retail was rejecting these cheeses, and the damage done now is more than 1 million Swiss francs. Yeah, this is huge. So I got involved into this problem. We could exclude propionic acid and butyric acid fermentation. And I would like to show you the chromatogram of the biogenic amine profile, something that I have never seen before. We found every biogenic amine playing a role in cheese is present, although this is really crazy. And what's the second point that is really crazy is, are the amounts. I have to remember you, it's 3 months after ripening. It's like, we have 4 months of ripening in the pilot plant case study. We had an accumulation of more than, nearly 1,500 milligram per kilogram of tyramine. And this is really a huge, more than 4,000 milligram per kilogram of cadaverine. And for me, I'm quite familiar with these kind of profiles. I could immediately say, it should be a Lentilactobacillus parabuchen reproducing the histamine. I could isolate this bacterium. And from this here, I already guessed tryptamine, phenylethylamine, putrescine. It should be Lentilactobacillus covatus. And this was quite a surprise because the covatus strain, as I said, produces usually more putrescine than cadaverine. So at the moment, the results we have from these cheeses, it's ongoing for months now. The cheesemaker did several cleanings. It's not disappearing. We find still covatus on the cheeses, and it's before cutting and packaging. Also we can isolate it already. All the isolates produce biogenic amines, and there are isolates that produce cadaverine, there are isolates that produce tryptamine. You can use the PCR to confirm that they are present. They are only on the surface. They are not in the inside of the cheese. And we also sequence these, and it's all taken together. It's a mixture of Lentilactobacillus covatus strains on these cheeses. And our hypothesis is that this mixture outperforms the biogenic amine formation of a single strain, which makes it really so aggressive. We cannot explain the high cadaverine levels at the moment, but we suspect that there's another additional, not yet identified bacterium present in this mixture. And for helping the cheesemaker, the only method, as I tried several, is the PCR. So we're taking at every step when the cheese produces samples, then we make an enrichment and we check then for the presence of covatus to really find the source of contamination of this bacterium. This, I'm at the end. Thank all my collaborators for the pilot plant study. It would be not possible to do such studies without them. And I would like to thank you for your attention. I hope I could get you some useful insights, and I'm looking forward to the discussion. Honestly, Dodo, I did. Honestly, you do not taste it. What you really can taste, from my experience, is the histamine. You have this burning sensation, as said by Igor. Our cadaverine, also this name, for example, has it. You do not taste it. You can buy the pure substance, you can smell you. Yeah. And I do not really know anyone who can smell the cadaverine. Also, the tryptamine, we have done studies, this is also unpublished, where we had the sensory panel just to figure out if, nicht tryptamine, tyramine, if it can be sensed, and we have no really scientific evidence that you can sense it. You can go into the literature, there are cheesemakers who say that they have the ability to sense if tyramine is present or not. So with the smell and the taste, with the sensory evaluation, you will not find this. It's after packaging that you see suddenly this huge gas information.
Mm. So does it sound like it's more of a challenge for packaging technology, that a degassing valve that would allow the say you pack in roasted coffee so that it can degas with CO2 would be a downstream intervention if there is a single metallurgical problem with cheese?
As far as I understand, what the problem here is that the consumer refuses to buy cheese in bloated packages. If you would have a packaging where the CO2 goes out, as a, from a point of view as a cheesemaker, you would not have an issue. Here, the problem, if I understood your question correctly. So for me, this is completely new. I'm not a specialist on packaging. For example, the Swiss type, you have packages or plastics where you make the ripening. So then the CO2 can diffuse easily out because you have a propionic acid fermentation. And then when it goes to retail, it comes to a new package. And this has completely different transfer rates for gas. And then you get the issue. Something we would like also to find, it's like the parabuchnerie. We know that it is, for example, in the milk. We can find it there. But we do not understand how it comes into the milk. Very often, there's a hypothesis that it's silage, because Latilactobacillus lentibacillus, if you look at the microbiomes of silage, you find these genus there. But there's, at least I do not know any study who has really shown that the bacteria from silage or from herbs or some can enter the milk. Yeah.
So that's like George
and you used lactobacillus covasis. Why didn't you use lactobacillus parabuchula?
This we did, this was I'm showing you 4 years ago.
So you have
No, we're still doing research on the histamine formation, but I thought for this conference I would like to show you something else which has a huge impact, or can have a huge impact on when you try to sell your product. It's not only histamine which makes problems, but it's also the other ones. It's a different species. We have done experiments with this because you find it in silage.
Some people sell it as a silage additive.
Exactly. I've checked these all. They do not produce biogenic amines. What they produce is gamma butyric acid, and this is maybe something you would like to have in cheese. And if you add these to milk and make cheese out of it, then these Buchnerei grow very well, and you get high concentrations of gamma amino butyric acid in your cheese, maybe. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Is this
something that has become more prevalent in the more recent time than it was, I do not know because this really popped up now 6 years ago for the first time that packages started to bloat. Maybe it was already present before, but nobody knew really what was going on. And usually you go for butyric acid or propionic acid fermentation or the mixed acid fermentation first.
I did some research just on Google, and I understood that
So I would really not try to add it. So what is used quite frequently is in the fermentation of sausages. That's a starter culture, and there the producers of these starter cultures really select for non-biogenic amine-forming strains. But it's a good point. I could use a non-biogenic amine-producing strain once to add it together with parabuchnerie. Just maybe if you like to do it, and then we can see if we can have an inhibitory effect. It's a good idea, yeah. Mm. I'm not aware of this study. it was added as an antihistamine bacterium. Mm.
Any other questions? Thank you very much, Stefan.
Now you'll be pleased to know it's time for another coffee and tea break. It's next door and 45 minutes, and while you're over there in preparation for the next presentation, do have a taste of some of Jemima's cheeses, which she's brought here with her today, so that you can just get those flavors and textures in your mind. So I think there might be some cookies as well.